You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome back to the Eclipse Nation podcast. I'm your host, Sabrina Merchant, and I am joined today by Garrett Korpening from Sports Illustrated, where he also covers the Clippers. Garrett, how's it going?
Going really well, Sabrina. How are you?
I'm doing well, not as well as the Clippers are. It's been a nice last couple days for the LA team. Big blowout wins over both Minnesota and Portland. The Portland one was actually really quite fun. I mean, when this team starts hitting threes, it is something to behold. But where I wanted to start with you, Garrett, is I know we had a lot of preseason expectations about what this team was going to look like. Me personally, the fact that they just looked so terrible during the preseason had me a little concerned about what this group was going to look like. But once the regular season has started, I have been forced to reevaluate all of my preconceived notions about these Clippers. And so I wanted to start with you, Garrett. Is there anything that you thought heading into the season, I realize it's only been like 8 days so far, that you have been forced to reconsider when it comes to the 2020-21 Clippers?
Yeah, so one of the biggest things for me, a few others too, I expected a slow start with this team, just because, like you mentioned, the preseason, but also with the roster turnover, with the new coaching staff, all those things, I wasn't feeling super confident about the, you know, first couple weeks of the schedule, just because it would take a while to get integrated, and with the short off season as well. Just figured that things look a little rough for the first month or so until they start to pick things up and get to know each other. And the preseason kind of verified that for me. I didn't want to put too much into it, but like you said, they looked a little rough. But yeah, the way they started this season is totally blown me away. They seem really far ahead of where I figured they would be at this point. Much more, I think, cohesive team than we saw last season, especially with all the ball movement, all the communication and that sort of thing as well. I've definitely had to change my expectations a little bit. Definitely exceeding what I had thought so far.
Yeah, I'm kind of on the same page. I was of the belief that the Clippers were going to try to take the regular season very seriously, just because of all of the grief, you know, we and everybody else gave them last year for sort of gliding through those 82 games, or what ended up being 72 or whatever, considering what happened. But I wasn't sure if they would have the capability, you know, to, you know, hit the gas immediately, just because, like you said, there was an entirely new coaching staff and significant personnel changes. Like, even if you consider the fact that the Clippers have the same starting lineup that they did last year, or theoretically, you know, they did because of Zubac and Marcus Morris were on this team. Morris, you know, only came in February. You know, it's not like he was an integral part of this team. Even parts of the rotation, like Reggie Jackson, was only here for a short period of time. So it seems like this group has been together for a while, just because months wise, it's been a long period of time, but the actual amount of basketball they played was not so substantial. So I'm glad to see that, like, there was clearly a discussion that was had, you know, that they want to take these games, they want to take them with some sense of urgency, because, like, this is their chance to develop as a basketball team. I wasn't sure that it was going to look this good so fast. And obviously there was one glaring exception to it looking good, but we don't really need to talk about that because I don't think it's supremely predictive of what's coming forward. It's been really a pleasant surprise. I like watching a team that comes and plays hard every night. And regardless of what the results are, it's just refreshing to see that the Clippers seem to have that attitude. And to me, that's the most important thing so far.
Yeah, I mean, we can even see it in, like, the post-game media sessions and that kind of stuff. And the way they look on the court, like, this team plays with so much joy, and they really feel like they enjoy being on each other. And I can't say for sure if that was the case last season. They just really seem like they enjoy being out there and playing together. I've just been really, really impressed with what I've seen so far.
Right. And I think, you know, we have to start at the top when it comes to this sort of new look Clippers. And as much as I hate to give credit to coaches over players, because I really do think the players are the most important factor here, a lot of this starts with Ty Lue. Now, I was never one of the people who thought that Doc Rivers was like a bad coach. You know, I still don't think he is a bad coach, although the gap in what the Clippers look like so far and what they looked like the last couple of years is startling, let's say. Yeah. And Philadelphia hasn't looked any better than I would have hoped. So I'm not going to put this in like the, you know, Mark Jackson, Steve Kerr jump that the Clippers are experiencing, but there's definitely a gap, you know, in what the Clippers were able to do on the court last year and what they've been able to do this year. Part of that obviously has to come from the fact that Kawhi Leonard and Paul George are healthy right now when they weren't at this point of the season last year. Having your best players on the court naturally makes you look better. There's no denying that. But there's also the fact that the Clippers run sets. Like, who knew?
Right.
The fact that they're not just, you know, relying on Kawhi to use his individual brilliance to make something happen, or Lou Williams or Paul George, that they actually have offensive actions. And when the first one stalls, like, lo and behold, there is another one. What is happening here, Garrett? Like, what am I watching?
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I've been most impressed by, and you hit it there with like the different actions they've run. And I think last season there was ball movement, but it felt more like it was ball movement because they just felt like they kind of had to do it. And this year it seems like they're moving the ball with a purpose, and like, they know where they want to get the ball. They know what the next pass is going to be, or what the next shot is going to be, you know, from that ball movement. I don't know exactly what the stat was. I think it was a couple nights ago, but I want to say it was like the Clippers averaged like 271 passes per game last season, and it's up to around 320 this season.
Right.
And so obviously, you know, ball movement, just the sake of ball movement, isn't like the number one thing, and it's not going to be like, you know, a game changing thing. But like I said, like, they're moving the ball with a purpose this season. They're getting a ton of assists. They all seem like they're making smart passes around the perimeter. Yeah, the system in place, the Ty Lue's offense really is making a big difference with this team.
Right. And I think you hit the nail on the head there with like the type of passes they're making, because, you know, as our fun guy Kawhi Leonard said last night, just making passes is not like a sign of basketball IQ, right? Like, there can be teams that move the ball around a lot and just don't have a good offense. But what the Clippers are doing, the fact that, like, you know, they're moving off the ball, and so some of those passes hit cutters in the lane, and then you're able to kick out once the defense collapses, or all those driving kicks. And, you know, when the doubles come, they're making the right reads out of those, you know, situations. I know Ty talked about this yesterday, where the Clippers specifically, you know, do live practices where Kawhi, PG, and Lou are the ball handlers, and they get blitzed and doubled, and they have to, you know, find the right reads out of those. And I mean, Lou said that they've been doing this for a little while, but this is the first time they've ever done it live, not just drilling it, which I'm not entirely sure what that means, but it sounds better, right? Yeah, you know, using practice, what a concept. But there's a look with the Clippers that, yeah. I mean, I think part of it is that Ibaka is a bit of a better passer than Zubac in the starting lineup. Not like a substantial difference, but there's something there. And then just the night and day difference between Marcus Morris and Nicholas Batum, where Marcus Morris definitely provided a lift to the offense when he first came to the Clippers, just because he was a shooter that you had to respect in that starting five, which Mo Harkless was not. But Batum, I mean, I didn't expect to start here when I was thinking about, you know, all of the wonderful things that have happened for the Clippers on the court this year. But I had, let's say, slightly above zero expectations for Nick Batum this year. I mean, I don't think it's unfair to say that his tenure in Charlotte was less than impressive. And the fact that the Hornets were willing to pay him $9 million a year not to play for them so that they could sign Gordon Hayward was not a ringing endorsement of what he was capable of doing, you know, at age 32. But my goodness, is he exactly what the Clippers need? Just a ball mover who makes open shots, grabs rebounds, is just the perfect connector for everything the Clippers need on the court. I get that Ty Lue's system is like the overarching, you know, force that's making everything look better, but having a player like Batum in the starting lineup, just what an inspired choice by Ty there, and what an inspired choice for the Clippers to get him and realize that he was going to work so perfectly here.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And one of the things that I've seen brought up on Twitter recently is Kawhi's comments after the end of last season. We talked about getting players with like higher basketball IQ on the court, and everyone just immediately said, oh, point guard, they need a new point guard, they need a point guard upgrade, all those sorts of things. And Nick Batum, you know, obviously not a point guard, but he's someone that fits that basketball IQ mold to a T. I mean, he's always in the right place at the right time. He's always crashing the boards. He is in the right place on defense. He makes the right passes. Even if they're not assists, he still kicks the ball around when he needs to and is excellent at finding the open man on offense. So like you said, I mean, my expectations for Batum were also very low based on what I saw in Charlotte and the injury concerns. And just, I read some stuff about from Charlotte fans saying that he just didn't look all that motivated to be there. And I was like, I really don't know if this is the right choice bringing him in, but I mean, it's a minimum. So, you know, whatever it is, but his place in this rotation and the way he's looked so far this season has totally blown me away. And I think he's by far and away the most underrated acquisition they made this offseason.
I'd argue he's like the most underrated acquisition any team made this offseason.
He's right there.
A huge coup to pick him up. He said something interesting the other day, I think it was after the Christmas Day game, where he felt like the Clippers needed him. You know, it wasn't so much that he thought it was like a good fit, like he was going to shine or something. He just said that the Clippers, like, you look at what they have and they need me. You know, they need a guy who's going to not care about his stats or, you know, how many points he's going to score. They need a guy who's just going to make the smart play over and over again. And that's what I do. And I do think that, you know, it's fair for a guy to lack motivation in Charlotte when I like Kemba Walker quite a bit. It wasn't a great situation there. It's not like they were making regular postseason runs, or even when they got to the postseason, they didn't even win any series. So just to experience that change of situation from an Eastern Conference other ran, you know, to a title contender would naturally get you a little bit more excited to play basketball again, I would imagine. And he seems to be in better shape from what I can tell. I'm trying not to get too excited because, like you said, there have been some injury concerns. It's only 5 games into the season. We don't know if this is sustainable, but it's good to know that like the peak version of Nick Batum is something that fits in with the Clippers and something that really lifts them to another level. So at least that's in your back pocket. Like in the event that Batum needs to be load managed towards the end of the regular season, you know, or just like take some games off the route, at least you know what's there, you know?
Right.
And that's something to think about fondly in the event that something happens later in the season. But yeah, Nick Batum, just what a delight. And I got to tell you, having the guys like him and Ibaka just to talk to, the accents are great. I just can't stress it enough. The accents are really great. It's just a nice thing to have. The little things you got to enjoy. Nick Batum, really fun. Let's go over to the other major Clipper acquisition of the offseason, and that would be Serge Ibaka. I think we were all fairly surprised when Ty decided that he was going to start Ibaka in favor of Zubac, just because, I mean, I know that I spent most of the season saying that Zubac needed to play more. And for Montrezl Harrell and Jermichael Green to both leave, and then the Clippers to decide, oh, we're going to bench Zu after this dramatic improvement I think he showed over like the year and a half that he's been with the Clippers, kind of seemed unfair to Zu. But fortunately, it seems like the dynamic in the locker room is strong enough that Zu hasn't taken this as a demotion. And it probably also helps that he's playing more minutes than he did when he was a starter. But what did you think about Ibaka starting, and how have you come down on that decision?
Well, yeah, I was a little surprised at first, like you were. And I think to go with Zu there too, I think the biggest thing for him is that, like you said, he hasn't viewed it as a demotion. He seems like he's taking it all in stride, and he's still saying like, you know, I have the same role still. I'm still doing the same things. It's just off the bench instead. And I do think he is a great fit with that bench unit so far. I think putting him with guys like Lou Williams and Luke Kennard, especially putting shooters around him where he can go inside and he can crash the boards and kick it back out to them. I think it's been a really great fit there. But yeah, with Serge and the starters, I've loved everything he's done so far. I think he's been a really great option to have in the pick and pop, where he's been shooting above the key. He's been great from 3-point range. And then even as a pick and roll guy, he's been great just passing out to the corners and getting those open shots. He's been a better rebounder than I expected. He's been a better interior scorer than I expected. I know it was that Minnesota game and they're a little thin in the front court, but he had some really great finishes inside that really impressed me. And then there's been a lot of talk too about like how he's not the shot blocker he used to be, not the defender he used to be. He's still been really solid on that end. And I think his presence is definitely still felt. So yeah, I've liked a lot with what I've seen from Ibaka so far. Like, yeah, I was surprised with him starting, but so far I think it's looking like the right move.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that he's not the shot blocker he used to be, which I think statistically has definitely proven itself, but it takes a long time for reputations in the NBA to change. So even though he's not the athlete that he used to be, and he's not blocking shots at that same rate, he still is viewed, you know, as a guy that you don't necessarily want to challenge at the rim. And I think just his presence is something of a deterrent, which you know, for better or worse, it just, it takes a long time for guys to realize that, oh, this guy's not a good shooter anymore. This guy like is a good shooter now. So he's sort of benefiting from that, which, you know, hey, I still do believe that he's not as good of a defender as Zubac is, mm-hmm. but within the construct of that starting lineup where 1 through 4 are all plus defenders, it's not as important for him to be that guy. So I guess it's okay that, you know, you're bringing Zoo off the bench, especially because, you know, the bench that the Clippers have is filled with less than average right. defenders. So it's a nice trade-off, you know, to have some sort of defensive integrity in the middle when you have, let's say, flammable guards in Lou Williams and Luke Kennard mm-hmm. and Reggie Jackson, who thankfully do not play together as much as they used to. But that sort of brings me back to another Ty Lue point, which is staggering your best player is just what a concept. I mean, I've always understood the argument that you want your best players to play together as much as possible, because just the effect of having them on the court together is so dramatic. And like, I think, you know, the Nets are still doing that this year with Kyrie and Kevin Durant. Those guys like to be on the court at the same time. So they just do that and then let Caris LeVert run the show when he's off the court. But like, it works because they've got, you know, a Jared Allen, you know, to, and like a lot of really other good players to help that bench unit work. It doesn't work when you have just like 5 defensive turnstiles playing together at the same time, like the Clippers kind of did. And it's not to say that their offensive contributions are not important. It's just, you know, you've got to balance your lineups. And I think the way that Ty Lue's done that by having one of PG or Kawhi on the court at all times is really important, because it just, I mean, for one, they're just all really good players. And I, as much as I like the combination of Kawhi and PG, I don't think that they necessarily complement each other to the point where you need to have them together at all times. Mm-hmm. Like obviously having 2 guys that good on the court together makes things challenging for a defense. Like there's no getting around that, but there's nothing inherently like synergistic about their games that you'd need them to play together all the time for them to make each other better, which mm-hmm. is just like an interesting roster dynamic that the Clippers have that maybe other teams with 2 stars don't. But yeah, I like Zoo coming off the bench. I've always loved the Lou Williams, the Visa Zubac combination. I mean, even back when they were on the Lakers, I thought it was a fun combination. But yeah, it's just something that's persisted, even though they barely played together over the last year and change, because Montrezl Harrell was obviously occupying all those minutes. It's been a really good time. I'm so impressed that Zoo has taken this, again, not a demotion, but like, you know, change in role so swimmingly, because people care about starting. And it seems like he's not starting and he's probably not going to be closing still, just because of this natural fit that Ibaka has with the starters. And that's a hard thing to swallow, I think, because like this was his role. He was the starting center, and it's not a small thing that he's managed to take this in stride and not have any sort of complaints about it, at least not publicly, which mm-hmm. is probably the most important thing. But yeah, go Zoo. I still think he's getting better. I mean, there was this weird thing where he had, 2 rebounds over the course of 2 games against Denver and Dallas, which I'm not entirely sure how that's possible when you're 7 feet tall and you're playing 20 minutes a game. But he's just so strong in the paint. And I love the idea that he gets to bully these backup 5s who are just generally not as big as him, because who really is bringing a 7-footer off the bench? Like we saw this against the Lakers, which is just so funny because they bring Montrezl Harrell off the bench now. And Zoo is just obliterating him. Like mm-hmm. he's so much stronger than Montrezl Harrell. He's so much bigger. He can out rebound him, just bully him in the paint. And I'm not like sold yet that Ibaka needs to be the permanent starter. I think a lot about his situation in Toronto a couple of years back when Nick Nurse would rotate between him and Jonas Valanciunas, depending on the matchup, like who was a better fit that night, just in terms of if you need somebody more mobile or somebody bigger. And I think we might see those situations for the Clippers down the line, but just what a great start by Zoo to take this role in stride, to just be awesome with Lou, to be a supremely good defensive player. And like, he's on the second year of a $28 million contract. I know we give the Clippers a lot of grief about some of the deals where they appear to have paid a little bit more on the back end than they needed to do. This Zubac contract is a steal. And their center position as a whole, I think, is just what a fantastic use of resources. I can't say enough about it.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing for me too this year. And it's been talked about a lot, but the fact that they have 2 7-footers at center now, that they can have 2 legitimate rim protectors, 2 big guys just throw at people. And like you said too, with Zoo dominating off the bench, you know, I think is there a better way for him to build confidence? You know what I mean? I mean, mm-hmm. with him going against guys like Trez and like younger centers, or not younger centers, but smaller centers off the bench, the fact that he can, you know, feast on the glass like that and score inside with ease and He's gotten to the line a lot this season, I thought too, because he's so big and imposing that the other guys just can't handle him. I think, you know, like you said, I think we will probably see Zoo start in some matchups this season, just because I don't know if I like Surge against some of the bigger guys. But for now, for what we've seen, I think I like the role for him off the bench.
That's a really good point about building his confidence against guys who necessarily aren't as good. That's really interesting. I wonder if that's something Ty considered when he was making that decision.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
So I think, you know, two for two on Zubac and Batum in terms, I'm sorry, Ibaka and Batum in terms of offseason acquisitions. I would say that the third one has been a little bit less successful. I like Luke Kennard quite a bit. His production has been a little hit or miss. You know, I know that the Clippers have just been telling him to be as aggressive as possible, you know, looking for his shot, and it has gone in with mixed rates. But in terms of the trade the Clippers make, I can't fault it at all, because they got rid of the salary of Rodney McGruder, who through no fault of his own really just could not find a place with the Clippers. And I thought maybe this might be his year, you know, with Dan Craig coming in from Miami and them having that connection where McGruder really made his NBA career happen. Was not to be the case. And then the Clippers also got 4 second round picks out of it, which I think about that, you know, like every couple hours or so, honestly, just because it's like this remarkable instance of where I assumed Troy Weaver was a good GM, and then it's just like, oh, maybe he's just trying to get rid of all the guys who weren't his and create an entire new team in his image, but whatever. Luke Kennard, you know, still shooting, what, 39% from threes. It just seems like he hasn't quite found his total footing with the Clippers, and that's to be expected. You know, like, he's a younger guy. He's never been in a winning situation in the NBA. For the long term, I think it's a good idea to have him around, just because he has naturally more upside than Shaman, I would think. We'll just see how that works out. I'm just interested. Have you seen anything from Kennard that excites you particularly or worries you? Or
Well, I think the biggest thing with Kennard, like you said, with Shaman, it's like he just has more upside. I think we've already, even though he hasn't looked his best, I think we've already seen things that he's done this year that Shaman just couldn't do. I mean, he's gotten into the paint and he's put up some floaters, which is something we rarely saw Shaman do. I think he penetrates really well. I think he's a little bit better of a playmaker. Again, his shot hasn't quite gone yet, but I think, you know, in time and as he continues to build confidence, it's going to go. I think one of the big things with him too is that up until the first game of the season, he hadn't played in over a year. Mm-hmm. And he's now with a new situation, new team, again, the short offseason situation too. So like all these things, I think, kind of compound and make things, have made things a little bit more difficult for him to adjust and get used to being in this new team. But yeah, I think he looked really confident. I think it was in the Minnesota game where he had, I want to say 13 points it was with the starters there. Yeah, I think as he continues to build that confidence and is a little more aggressive with his shot, kind of stops hesitating when he has an open look and just takes it instead, kind of lets it go. He's going to be a really reliable and really great shooter for this team. And I'm looking forward to seeing how he continues to grow with this unit.
Yeah, it's funny to think that like he hasn't been shooting well when, like I just said, he's made 39% of his threes, which is just like a solidly above average number.
Yeah.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. It just sort of feels that he doesn't seem to have his footing in the same way that the other guys do. And you mm-hmm. make an excellent point about the fact that he had not played a game for a full calendar year before he started the season with the Clippers. So maybe that has something to do with it. I also think it's nice that he's just a guy who can bring the ball up the court under pressure. You know, it's always nice to have an extra ball handler. You know, that's another thing that Nick Batum brings. Just like they literally have him start the offense, you know, at the top of the key on certain sets, which, I mean, how many teams have their power forward do that? It's just a wonderful luxury that he brings. But yeah.
Right. If I can get him a tomb real quick, I wanted to ask you, I think there's been a little bit of a discussion. I don't know how valid it is or whatever it is about having Marcus come off the bench once Marcus is back. And I wanted to see where you're at on that, because I think with, you know, how much they paid to bring Marcus back and how well he did seem to fit with the starters, you know, to a degree as like a shooter and that kind of thing last season. I think there is a little bit of an argument to be made just based on how well Batum has fit in with these starters and how well he moves the ball, to keep him there at least for a little bit until Marcus maybe gets his footing back and looks, you know, all the way healthy again. Where are you at on that?
Yeah, so I saw that on Twitter for the first time last night after the Portland game, when, you know, just another quietly excellent Nick Batum performance. I am of the belief that because, like you said, of how much money they've invested in Marcus Morris, it's probably best to keep him as a starter for the time being. And because I generally have faith in the way that Ty Lue has mixed and matched his lineups, like guys are getting shorter shifts. They're coming in and out multiple times during each half. You can still get Batum enough time with Ibaka, with Kawhi, you know, so that like you can play Marcus as a starter and still reap the benefits of having Nick with like the superstars too. So it shouldn't be a problem in that sense. Like in previous iterations of the team, right? Like there was a distinct starting unit and distinct second unit. So, you know, crossing over between those two meant you weren't going to play with any of the other guys, but I'm not sure that that's the case anymore. So let Marcus start unless he's just, you know, terrible coming off of this sore knee or, but I do think that in the playoffs, like it's so I'm getting so far ahead of myself, but just, I'm thinking about Marcus Morris's game, right? And he's an excellent shooter, an excellent isolation scorer. I've never thought that moving the ball and like moving off the ball are his primary traits, like what serve him well. He can shoot off of spot ups, but like, he's not the guy who's going to be, you know, curling off of screens or, you know, relocating based on a certain action that's happening on the other side of the court. He's a scorer first, right? And like that makes the Clippers really offensively potent in that starting lineup, but I'm not sure it's what they need so much. I just also think it's really hard to bench that guy when like all he did wrong was he got hurt, you know? But then again, they also just benched Zubac and he did literally nothing wrong. So I would like to think that Ty has enough equity within the locker room to make those kinds of decisions and bring Marcus off the bench. I also just like, I worry about the egos, you know, like I maybe I shouldn't, because we've seen, you know, obviously just one instance of this working out seemingly for the first five games, but Marcus to me seems like a guy who came to the Clippers expecting to start and he probably re-signed with his team expecting to start. Maybe those things change when you're getting paid $60 million a year. It doesn't really matter what they're paying you to do. Like you can just take the money and walk with it. But my gut says that they're going to try starting him and it could probably still work just depending on how the staggers work. But I think it's too early to say that they need to start Batum just because it's only been five games. Obviously he's been like a really interesting fit with the starters. I just think it's too early. And Marcus does enough things well. Like he's a solid enough defender. He's a really good shooter, that you're not sacrificing, you know, a ton. I'm not even sure you're sacrificing anything because like he's a more respected shooter on the corners. Like Nick Batum's getting wide open shots. And I'm not just, and that's not just because like the Clippers are running an offense that gets him wide open shots. It's because people don't trust him to make those shots. And just like putting an extra defender on Marcus Morris could just create more space for the other guys to do their stuff.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. And I agree. I think, I think the biggest thing you said was the staggering, right? And like, this is a move that Doc probably wouldn't have done last year, where you wouldn't probably see Nick get hardly any more minutes of the starters after he goes to the bench. But because Ty is focused on equity and there's the shorter rotations and that sort of thing, or the shorter stints in the rotations, I think you'll definitely still see Nick with the starters once he moves to the bench. And as long as he gets those minutes, as long as he can still make an impact there, I think it's going to be good. So
it's funny that we're even having this conversation though, because like we said earlier, just, I mean, when I saw Batum in the starting lineup, just even in the preseason, I was thinking, I mean, I guess Patrick Patterson could be better.
Yeah. It felt like that too. Like with Paul George being out last year and started Pat with the first 11 or so games, it just felt like a replay of that. But yeah, it's been a totally different situation.
Yeah, I still like what Patrick Patterson does. I mean, I think he's one of those guys where you just know exactly what you're going to get from him every time he steps onto the court. And that's an excellent quality to have in a veteran who doesn't get to play every game. Mm-hmm. Just superly consistent, takes a lot of good shots. He took this wild ass floater last night against the Blazers where he like drove in from the baseline. I'm not really sure what was happening there, but yeah. Good for all of the Clippers who have settled into these new roles under Ty Lue, and just everyone seems to be happy, right? I mean, I keep thinking about this Blazers game last night. There was one possession where Kawhi sort of dumped it off to Serge for a three-pointer at the top of the key, and he's like running back, and then he sees it goes in, and he like gives this like nice fist bump after Serge makes a three. And it's just like, Kawhi was never that happy for anybody last year, except for maybe Zoo. He really likes Zubac. You can kind of see that they still celebrate with each other like on the bench sometimes, but it's nice to just have the guys in a good mood, you know? Like there's obviously Kawhi and Ibaka have this relationship dating back to Toronto. There's like a startling number of guys who have spent time with the Detroit Pistons, which I'm not sure is a plus, but they've all been there. I'm not sure that Marcus Morris was ever there with Luke Kennard, but he's definitely there with Reggie. But yeah, that was a while back. And then, you know, PG obviously loves Reggie and Pat, and there's like you said earlier, they're playing with a definite amount of joy, and it's not a tangible thing, but just watching the games, you feel it. It makes it more pleasant to watch. And I'm sure it makes it easier for them to play with one another and accept these, you know, changing roles and situations just because they seem to genuinely like one another, which considering how few personnel changes have made since last year, I think we can pretty much target what the problem was or what the two problems were. It's good to see.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely good to see. Is there anything about Kawhi and PG this year that has interested you?
I think it's Kawhi. I think it's Kawhi talking as much as he has, and the way he's even talked with us in the media sessions. He's just been more vocal. I know Serge Ibaka has talked about it. Now he's made like a very, you know, concerted effort to talk more and be just more of a vocal leader with the team. And like you said, with the way he's been, you know, displaying emotion on the court, there was a moment I can think of, and I don't remember if it was preseason against the Lakers or if it was that first game, but I think they're on a fast break and Pat was on the opposite wing that Kawhi was on, and Kawhi looked at him and kind of just did like a shoot it motion. Mm-hmm. And it's just like little things like that, that you never saw from Kawhi last year. And it's like this kind of, he's a little more like, he's just showing emotion. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to see from someone that is always so deadpan and always so serious. And it seems like he's genuinely having fun, and it's not just like something that, like, you know, Ty said, like, go out there and talk more. Like, I feel like that probably happened to a degree, but like, mm-hmm. he's also just, I think he feels better about this team and feels better about the players that are around him. And he's really actually like enjoying himself, and it's great to see. And then with Paul George, I think, you know, based on what we saw in the bubble last year, coming into this season, there was a lot of discussion about him, and I think the focus this season was seeing kind of how he bounced back from that. And there was a lot of tension on him to start the season. And so the way he's played so far, you know, with the exception of that Dallas game, I think he's been phenomenal. He's been shooting the ball really well. I think as a playmaker, he's been great. He talked last night about how he wants to make more of an effort to rebound the ball. And he picked up 10 last night, which I think was a season high. So seeing him become a little more versatile and do all kinds of things in the court besides just shoot the three, I really like what I've seen from both of them.
Yeah, just seeing PG attack the paint so relentlessly has been really cool. Mm-hmm. And then just being able to make plays out of that. Like, I'm not accustomed to looking at a Paul George box score and seeing 5-6 assists on the reg. Like, it's kind of a new thing to see him utilize as this kind of playmaker. I know Doc Rivers used to say that Paul George started his career as a point guard, and that seems outlandish to me because I don't think that's ever been correct. I distinctly remember that Frank Vogel had a rule with him in Indiana that he was not allowed to split the pick and roll because he's just turned the ball over every single time he did it. Like, there have been limitations placed on him as a ball handler and as a creator. And I think those have been fair because, you know, we've seen him be a little careless with his handle, even with the Clippers. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's showed up, you know, in terms of his turnovers over the first five games. But I like that they're stretching him out a little bit because they have, you know, the ability to get back in defense if they turn the ball over. And just, this is an experimental time, right? Like, it's a regular season. They should be trying things out to see what's going to work down the stretch. And, you know, unlocking this new facet of Paul George's game is really interesting to me because, to me, he just seems like the most unguardable player on the Clippers. Like, I know Kawhi is the best player, but there's like, there's a mold of a wing defender who can give Kawhi Leonard trouble because they have the right size and they have the right strength, and they can, you can put a body on him and just make his life difficult. But I can't figure out the type of player who makes Paul George's life difficult, because you have to be able to come across screens and defend him as a shooter. And then you have to be able to handle like him as he's barreling at you in the lane, because he's so much bigger than any shooting guard in the league. And now if he's, you know, going to be a willing passer, then like, how do you double him? You know, how do you send extra help? And it's obviously only five games. It's very early, but I'm very impressed with the type of responsibility that he's taken on in the offense so far. And it's cool to see him just get a little bit better, a little bit sharper with his handle as we progress, because it's a part of his game that I didn't think was like explored at all last year. Not to the degree that he was only like running JJ Redick, Ray Allen shots or whatever, but the playmaking that he was asked to do, I thought was like fairly rudimentary. It wasn't anything more complex, but Ty Lue's letting him go a little bit, and it's cool to watch, because I mean, this is year 11 for Paul George, but I still think there's room for him to grow as a player. And it's always fun to watch guys just get better. In terms of Kawhi, I think you hit it, you know, all with the talking. I feel like we think about the Toronto season and it's just like, oh, well, he went there. It was his first year and he was immediately awesome. And they all immediately loved each other and they won a title. And why couldn't he do that with the Clippers? I think maybe him having a friend and Danny Green helped things out. And we sort of overlooked that fact when he came to the Clippers and had no friends. I don't mean to say that he like didn't have friends on the team, but like he had no like existing relationships with any of the guys. And now he has one. He's got Serge and he also knows all the guys from last year. So that's cool. Watching Kawhi celebrate is literally my favorite thing because it's so understated. But like when he celebrates, like everybody gets pumped, you know, it's like the one thing that ignites everyone. So it's just cool to watch. Anything else that sticks out to you just from the start of the season that you've, you know, felt was worth mentioning?
Just with Kawhi and PG? Or
just in general on the team, you know?
I've been really impressed with the resilience and the way they've bounced back, especially from that 50-point loss, which was just wow. yeah, but just because we didn't see that last year, right? I mean, I wrote about it this morning with looking back at the Denver series and thinking about how they built those double. I think each of the last three games of that series, and then blew them and just looked lost completely on both ends of the floor. This season, they've built those leads, and then when they've been challenged, they've either sustained them or they've come back and built upon them. I think back to that Denver game last week on Christmas, where I think they were up for most of the game, and then Denver makes that run, cuts it to 10, and then Kawhi goes out, and I'm like, well, here we go. Like, this is, you know, Denver's going to finish this game and come back and win again. But to see them bounce back and I think build that lead up as high as 17 before the game came to an end, you know, that resilience, that resolve, I don't think is something we saw a whole lot from the team last year. And I don't know if that's just Ty Lue. I don't know if it's the players, you know, coming together and talking about and just being more open and communicating more. But the way that they've done that and the way they've kind of like weathered this storm over and over again and continue to come back and come back stronger from that has really impressed me.
Yeah. And it's funny because I think about Robert Flom tweets about this on Twitter all the time about how it's just such a small sample size to like make these narratives about the Clippers, but
yeah,
there's just like a feel you can get. And I think we had that feel with the Clippers last year at the start of the season, that, you know, this premonition about just something that wasn't quite right. And it ended up, you know, coming to fruition, but hopefully we're right, you know, in this direction, that there is something more positive bubbling under the surface. And when they're faced with tough times, that they will eventually come back again, accepting that one terrible Dallas game.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the first game I went to this season. It's the first game I've been to at Staples Center since March, like my first live sports. I left at halftime. I mean, it was just like, I don't know what happened. It was just, I'd rather not talk about it. My voice is like even giving out just thinking about it. but yeah, I also just want to bring up Terrence Mann. Because the Clippers have not done a great job with drafting in recent years. They just declined, you know, Fiondu's third year option, which I believe he was the only member of his draft class to get his third year option declined.
Right.
And, you know, I was looking back at recent history of guys getting the third year options declined, and like Bryce Johnson comes to mind, you know, another late first round big that the Clippers drafted. So, you know, that the first round territory has not been great for the Clippers, obviously, excepting Shea, who is no longer on Clippers. But Terrence Mann has been kind of fun over the start of the season. When we talk about like past connections that these guys have, you know, him and Luke Kennard seem to be really good friends. I think they were part of the same high school class, which probably has something to do with it. But I know that they like, they want to make him this point guard, even though he was basically a wing in college. And I'm not sure that that has always been the smartest decision, but he does some really interesting things with the ball. And like that game against Minnesota, when he came out with the second unit, his, like he ran some pick and rolls with Zubac. He was like, he had this no look pass to Kennard when he cut in from the baseline, which might be my favorite play of the season, just because of the sheer like unpredictability of what was going to happen there.
Yeah.
But he looks far more confident than I would have expected coming into the season, considering how bumpy the ride was in year one. And I'm not sure if he's going to be like an every game kind of guy. Ty has said that he expects to have some sort of like rotating cast of playmakers in that second unit, which is understandable considering all the talent that they have on that roster. But I like that he looks better than he did a year before. I like that he looks more confident. His jumper is still just a disaster. That's going to take some time, but he looks like he belongs on a court now, which I wasn't sure was always the case last year, even when they were like force feeding him those backup point guard minutes. And I think that's a win. You know, he's a second year guy. He's a second round pick. I don't know what the long-term expectations for him are, but I think you can play him and like not expect him to be like a minus on the court. And that's kind of cool because like I said, the Clippers young players have just not always had that potential.
I don't know if I'm as big on Terrence right now to say that, like, I'm confident about him being on the court all the time. I haven't loved, like, the Terrence Mann point guard minutes. I think he's probably best doing something else. For me, it's just been, like, the awareness at times. I think there have been multiple 24-second violations where he's had the ball in his hands and there's been, you know, 2-3 seconds up on the clock and he just, I don't think he even sees it. And that's been a little concerning for me. But I think there's definitely a reality where he is usable in this rotation, right? I think he's solid enough on defense. I do like the way he's moved the ball at times. Like you said, that no look pass was like just totally crazy. Yeah. And I loved seeing it, but yeah, totally didn't expect it. I think once he gets a shot and he kind of settles more into a role, the coaching staff finds more of like a defined role for him where he can really excel. I think he'll be a solid like end of the bench guy. Long-term, I'm with you. I don't know if like, he gets any better than this because I think he is already 24. And you know, with this being his second year, I don't know how much more he really has to, you know, put into his game. I think, you know, once they find that right role for him and once they get something defined, he'll be a solid end of the bench guy, like I said.
Yeah, I don't think I said this well the first time, but he kind of gets to be a backup wing now because they have Kennard and because they have Lou Williams, where he's not asked to do as much ball handling or creation with the bench as he was last year. I don't think that the point guard thing is the right fit for him. Maybe, you know, doing that in the G League gets him the reps where he becomes more comfortable handling the ball. And like, that's always an important skill, no matter what position you play. But I like that he can play, you know, off the ball next to those other guys, because you put him as a secondary ball handler. And I think there's some, his size gives him some ability to like, you know, get into the paint and power some perimeter defenders, not necessarily overpower, just be longer and bigger. I'm just glad that like he hasn't completely fallen out of the rotation, which is what I worried would happen when Reggie Jackson came back.
Right.
And Reggie's been, you know, delightful. I mean, other than just one foul that he took in the bonus when like there was no reason to foul at Damian Lillard when Portland's already in the bonus. But yeah, making shots, throwing to the basket, just having a kick-ass time generally, given great post-game quotes. Like, what's not to love about Reggie Jackson? I'm just happy to see that like Terrence hasn't completely like fallen off the face of the earth. And it's cool to see that there's like some, maybe some light in the tunnel for that guy. But yeah, we've kind of hit on this already. Some of your favorite plays of the season. You mentioned the Kawhi, you know, telling Pat to shoot it. Anything else just like singular moments stick out to you?
Yeah, one of the things that jumped out at me from last night's game was just like Pat being Pat, where he...
We're talking Beverly, right?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, Patrick Beverly. I don't remember who missed the shot, but Yusuf Nurkic was under the basket and Pat ran up behind him and jumped up and tipped the ball in when he was standing like less than a foot away from him. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, that's just Pete. That's peak Pat, right? There's a 7-footer guy that's like almost 300 pounds standing right there in the paint. And little 6'1" Pat Bev hops up and gets the tip in over him. And I was just like, you can't describe Pat better than that play.
Yeah, it was so
incredible.
It was so perfect too, because I think Portland had just hit 2 threes and was like sort of making a run back into the game.
Yeah.
And you know, it seems like, oh, they just got to stop. And it's like, no, Pat's there. Like the best offensive rebounder in the game for some reason, yeah. Despite the fact that he's only 6'1".
Right.
Yeah. That's a good one. I don't understand it. Like, is it not on the scouting report, you know, to like box out Patrick Beverley? Do point guards just not know how to box out? It has to be on the scouting report because he does it all the time. Like every game, there is a situation where you think, okay, like other team's making a run, got a chance to get back into us. Oh, they just got to stop. Nope.
There's Pat. He flies out of nowhere and gets the board. Yeah. It's amazing.
I would love to dig in to like what happens on the possessions where he gets an offensive rebound. I just feel like the conversion rate is so high. Like it's so demoralizing. Maybe that's a project I want to dig into. Something to think about, but give me a good idea here, Carrots. Yeah. Anyway, this has been great. I think it's just nice to talk about a Clippers team that is fun and enjoyable and plays hard. All of those things put together, combined with their prodigious talent, I think would make them, to me, I think they're the favorites in the West. I'm not sure that the general public is there just because of, you know, they're not the defending champions or the defending mm-hmm. finalists. But I'm of the belief that this is the team to beat. And I sort of felt that way with their roster just because of the Ibaka addition. And now knowing that they've brought in like another capable player and Nick Batum, who can be part of their playoff rotation, that also helps quite a bit. So yeah, I think it's safe to say that I have I'm drinking all of the Kool-Aid after 5 games.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which hopefully I don't bite my, you know, tongue after this, because again, 5 out of 72 games, one of which we have not even really discussed. So
yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where I am.
Yeah. I feel like I'm with you on that. Like, it's crazy. I mean, looking at last year's roster, I think like maybe this is closer to what we all expected from last year's team. And mm-hmm. we're finally seeing it now that we have Ty Lue and a new coaching staff. To me, that's some of the biggest thing. Like the roster additions have been great, and the changes they've made have really, I think, helped this team out a lot. But I think Ty Lue has really unlocked the potential of this team, not only on offense, where I think he's made the biggest contribution, but the defense with the communication, the way they've looked on both ends this season. To me, I agree. I think that makes them the team to beat so far.
Yeah, and I'm really interested to see how the Clippers look on their first like series set, you know, like when they have to play mm-hmm. the same team twice, because we've given Ty all this credit, and I just want to see what those adjustments look like. You know, the first time he has to play a team twice, it's been really fascinating to watch other teams go through this process so far. The Clippers just haven't had it yet, but yeah, I'm looking forward to just general coaching nerdery, which, you know, good times.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, thanks again so much for hopping on the podcast, Garrett. Tell the people where they can find all your work.
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter at GA Corpenning. That's GACHORPENNING. And then as Sabrina said, I cover the Clippers for Sports Illustrated. The URL there is si.com/NBA/Clippers. You can follow me over there, read all my work.
Yeah, and I'll definitely make sure to include all that in the show notes. So 2020 ended for the Clippers on quite a nice note, and I'm so glad that we were able to talk about it. So thank you all for listening to the show. Make sure you're subscribed to the Clips Nation podcast on Spotify or iTunes, and we will catch you all in 2021.